It's the Lawn and Garden Show with Walter Reeves on News 95.5 and AM 750 WSB. It's brought to you by Pike Nurseries, your neighborhood garden center, playing in the dirt for more than 50 years. Call now with your lawn and garden questions at 404-872-0750 or 1-800-WSB-TALK. And now, here's Walter.
It's 7:08 at News Talk WSB, 69 degrees outside. This is Lawn and Garden. I'm Walter Reeves, the Georgia Gardener, here to help you be more successful in your landscape with whatever makes you happy. Whatever makes you happy, I will try to help you achieve that point. All you have to do is call me, 404-872-0750. 404-872-0750. The same numbers that Jody up in LJ dialed just a few minutes ago. And Jody's on the air. Jody, hey, good morning.
Good morning, Walter. How are you today?
I'm great, Jody. How can I help?
Well, I bought a house that was built about 40 years ago, 9 years ago, and it had a mysterious vine on a trellis in the yard.
Yeah.
My wife thought it was a kiwi, but the first 5 years we were living there, we didn't have any kiwis. About 2 years ago, we planted a male kiwi, and we've started having fruit. I want to know when to harvest, though, because it seems like they're just hard as a brick through Thanksgiving.
Yeah, sure.
And then after Christmas, they go pretty quick and dry up and shrivel up. I've checked on the internet in a bunch of places, and Lord, it seems like folks in different parts of the country harvest them different times of the year. So what should I do?
Jody, you have intrigued a number of listeners right now who are all saying to themselves, did he say LJ? He's got kiwi in LJ? What is going on? So are we talking about the regular big fuzzy green kitchen grocery store green kiwis? Is that what you're talking about?
Yes, sir. That's exactly what they are.
LJ.
LJ. And I actually,
wow.
three years ago, the first time we had fruit, I made kiwi jam out of them. I got 125 of them.
Yeah. And I have a neighbor in the sort of North Decatur area where I live who has a monster kiwi vine. And even for her, I think to myself, wow, you're lucky to have this here and not be frozen some of the years we've had in the last five. Jody, you're pushing the envelope that I did not know was even existing in LJ, Georgia. But I can tell you when to harvest the kiwi and a little bit more about maybe the physiology of what happened. And you knew this, I'm sure, that kiwis have a male vine and a female vine. You've obviously had a female vine, and it just
right.
wasn't getting any happiness or any males around, and so y'all planted that male vine to give pollen, which pollinated the female vine. Now she's happy. Now she makes a little growing kiwi fruit. So my neighbor, Candy, who has the kiwi vine there, she probably had 200 or 300 on the vine and just said, I'm so tired of picking kiwi off this vine and trying to give them to people at church. They all run when they see me coming. So she said, I can't give them any more away. Walter, go over there with a paper bag and just take a 2 dozen, 5 dozen, whatever you want off the vine. And I did. And when I harvested them, and this was in, Jody, this was probably the first week of October, I'm guessing. And they were hard as a rock. You could just bang them on the kitchen counter. It sounded like wood banging on the kitchen counter. And I took them and put them in a shallow cardboard box on my kitchen counter and left them there for, it was been at least 2 weeks after I harvested. And I noticed when I press on them and when I'd smell them a little bit, you could smell the perfume after a while coming from them. And as I squeezed them just a little bit after 2 weeks' time, they got softer and softer. And by 3 weeks probably after I harvested, I could slice it in half and then run a teaspoon inside and harvest or just scoop out basically the green kiwi. It was delicious, just delicious. So for you, I say wait till the 1st of October, maybe a little bit earlier than that in LJ, because you do get cooler and colder quicker than we do down here. But
yeah,
even though they're hard as a brick,
you can harvest
and then let them ripen on your kitchen counter.
Yeah, actually this morning at my house it was 59.
Yeah, it's 69 degrees here, so 10 degrees difference between the two of us. So I'm thinking when nighttime temperatures get down into the, around the 40s, mid-40s, I'm guessing, that would be the time to harvest and bring them inside. They're not going to do any better after that point.
Okay. By the way, I want to thank you for something. You were one of my instructors when I took the Master Gardener class at Wills High School in Smyrna.
Woo.
In 1991.
That was a long time ago, Jody.
Yeah, I know.
Hopefully you learned a little bit then.
Well, I think I did, but there wasn't anything in the textbook about kiwis in the North Georgia Mountains.
You are the textbook and for kiwi in North Georgia Mountains, Jody. So keep up with your success and let me know if anything weird, if they all die due to freeze, if anything that would be interesting for other kiwi enthusiasts to know, you call me back. I'd love to know how you do.
Well, I'll do that, and like I said, I know they've been there longer than 9 years because they were huge vines when we bought the house 9 years ago.
Yeah, sure. Unbelievable. Talk to you soon. Talk to you later, but talk to me sometime. Jody, let me know.
All right, will do. Thank you, sir.
The one that I'm harvesting from a neighbor down the street from me, it's about as big as an elephant. It is huge in her backyard. That kiwi vine is monster. There's a male and a female in there. And I took pictures of the flowers last year, I guess it was, just to make sure that I could tell myself which is which, the male and the female vine. And the female obviously has the fruit on it, and the male's the one with a little different kind of flowers. It has no fruit on it at all. They're all twined in together with each other, having great fun and making great tasting kiwi. Tony is in Marietta, Georgia, and joins us on Lawn and Garden. Tony, hey, good morning.
Hey, good morning. Our tree hibiscus is no longer flowering. It's indoor, outdoor. It's about 7 feet high. And for the first 3 years, our little grocery store plant just had magnificent blooms. Yeah. And then this last year, because it didn't bloom, we moved over to a 10-4 12 low phosphorus fertilizer and hoped that would do it. An earlier caller had talked to you, and maybe planting depth might be an issue, but what would cause where'd our flowers go?
All right, let's make sure I know which hibiscus you have. You said tree hibiscus. Is this one that has the trunks that are sort of braided together to form a trunk, or what do you mean by tree hibiscus?
It actually, it's the $19 grocery store tree that actually has a trunk that's probably now about 2.5 inches, but just a straight trunk going up 3-4 feet and then just blossoms out in a massive head of big green leaves and probably 7-inch flowers when it has flowers.
And you bring it in during the wintertime?
Yeah, right. We had to get a 2-wheel hand truck. We moved it over to about a 24-inch pot. And in the fall, because it is really massive, can't even get through the doorway, we cut it back a third to a half just so we can back it through the doorway and give it a nice window seat for the winter. And it drops all of its leaves and immediately starts to grow new leaves. And it just grows. It really is kind of miniature, but it grows beautiful all winter long in the window seat. And
yeah, well, I think that your problem is very similar to the guy previously. The blooms on the hibiscus come on new growth. If it doesn't have much new growth, you don't have any blooms. So, and they're heavy feeders too. And if you have not fed them very, very regularly, that could be the cause. It sounds like it's healthy. You got green leaves on it. You've already told me that. Seems to be growing pretty well in the new pot. So
it's doubled in size. The head is probably three times the size it was when we put it out in the spring. And we put in about 3 tablespoons of this low phosphorus fertilizer, mix it into the soil, and I was wondering, maybe it's hard to tell how much you're supposed to put in.
What does the label say? Is this one you're supposed to mix with water and pour in, or?
No, it's the Carl Pool, P-O-O-L, hibiscus food, and it says you mix it into the soil and water it in.
And there's no chance you're over-fertilizing, because the two things that cause hibiscus not to bloom is one, under-fertilizing, and the other is over-fertilizing. So you got to thread the needle right in the middle between the two. So is there any chance that you are over-fertilizing, perhaps?
Well, I don't think that's it, because we had used a multi-purpose general fertilizer, and it had a high phosphorus, and internet search says high phosphorus is going to cause it not to bloom. So,
but how often? How often are you fertilizing?
I'm looking at notes here. We fertilized it just 2 times this year, in March and in July.
Okay, you were right on that.
No ideas, huh?
Not a great one, other than to tell you, as I said just now, over or under, one of the two is very likely the cause. It does not sound like you're over-fertilizing if you've only fed it twice. Under is a possibility, but you've got such great growth on it now. You told me already that the head is so big. So light, how much light does it get? Less stab here, I guess, Tony?
Well, our deck is somewhat sheltered. It's about the most sun we're going to get here at our house, and it might be 6 hours a day out there, but we have all kinds of flowers and plants.
Yeah, that's plenty.
Everything out there is growing, even grow tomatoes out there, so... Not much room for chairs out there, but a lot of plants.
Well, the best thing I can say sometimes to people like you is enjoy the foliage. It's green, it's growing, you got something that looks like a nice, healthy plant there, and the flowers just become a bonus. I don't know why. You haven't told me anything that's a smoking gun or why it's not flowering. Over, under fertilizing doesn't seem to be the case. Lack of sun doesn't seem to be the case. Green leaves, there's no disease, no insects, that doesn't seem to be the case. I guess for you, Tony, it's just enjoy the foliage and be thankful you have that. It's 7:18 at News Talk WSB. We'll be back right after this.
This is Scott Slade, host of Atlanta's Morning News on News 95.5 at AM 750 WSB. We'll be covering breaking news, Kirk Mellish weather, and traffic red alerts through the weekend. And the Southeast's largest news team is here for you first thing Monday morning when you head back to work. News 95.5 at AM 750 WSB. Now back to Walter Reeves, the lawn and garden advice you need.
Seems I've got to have a
about it. Come on.
So let's see.
Is it going to be doing all right? It is going to be doing all right pretty soon. Jason.
It's got a long intro.
Got to get to it. That's right. We're feeling all right this morning. It is 7:26. It's going to be about a quick weather update, I should say, brought to you by Ackerman Security. Up to the low 90s, maybe 91, maybe today this afternoon. Overnight lows in the high 60s, about 70 degrees. We might break that too. Tomorrow about the same. Partly cloudy most days. 30% chance of rain overnight. Your full weekend forecast comes up in 10 minutes on News 95.5 and AM 750 WSB. David in Tucker, Georgia, joins us on Lawn and Garden. Hey, David. Morning.
Good morning, Walter. A couple of quick questions. Yep. What is the future of red knockouts? I understand there's something nasty destroying them. And is there such a thing as a white double knockout, which I have not found locally?
I've seen single whites, but I don't know of double whites. That's one you may have to keep looking for, the double white, that I'm just not aware that's available.
Okay.
As far as the red knockouts, all roses are susceptible to rose rosette disease, but we've been planting red knockout roses for the last, how long, David? 15, maybe 20 years almost. We've been planting those knockouts, you know. And so because we turn into sort of a monoculture of knockout roses, whenever you see the rosette disease on a rose, usually it's a knockout because that's what's been planted for the last dozen years. The ones that are there on the Huntington condominiums that are there on La Vista Road right across from the Wendy's and the Popeyes and all that kind of stuff, I noticed that they had pulled those roses out and something was planted in their place, I think, but I just saw it yesterday afternoon, didn't have time to go back and look again and see if they really replaced it with anything there. So if you want to keep an eye on the condominiums across from the old closed Wendy's on La Vista Road, that's where we'll find out whether or not the rose rosette will come back and hit those roses, or whether or not they will be able to get some healthy roses in there and withstand the rose rosette disease. It's 7:28 at News Talk WSB. Back to more Lawn and Garden after news.
It's the Lawn and Garden Show with Walter Reeves on News 95.5 and AM 750 WSB. It's brought to you by Pike Nurseries, your neighborhood garden center. Playing in the dirt for more than 50 years. Call now with your lawn and garden questions at 404-872-0750 or 1-800-WSB-TALK. And now, here's Walter.
7:36 on a Saturday morning, 69 degrees outside. This is Lawn and Garden. If you have a garden question, 404-872-0750. If you have an eclipse question or the traffic that leads up to the eclipse in North Georgia, don't forget we'll have the traffic chopper. We'll have everybody all hands on deck trying to get you around in North Georgia and give you the ideas of where the traffic is heaviest and not so heavy so you can enjoy the eclipse this Monday afternoon. Again, my number, 404-872-0750. And first in line, Brother Bob in Bishop, Georgia, who joins us on Lawn and Garden. Hey, Bob.
Walter,
good morning.
How you doing today?
Doing fine. How can I help?
Well, I'm calling for a friend in Madison who's got about 35 acres, 20 of it in horse pasture down in a floodplain, and he says every oak tree on his property is dead. And I was wondering if you had some indicator he could look for, you know, to see what's wrong.
I tell you, the drought hammered red oaks and white oaks this year, and this is the drought of last year, but probably the drought of 2000, see, when was the last one before that? It was about 2013 or 14 that we had a long period of drought in the middle of the summer. And the thing that I think about with trees, and the little picture I have in my mind, is they're like the Titanic. It is really, really hard to move the rudder in one direction and have the tree, or the Titanic in this case, to turn in a different direction very quickly. And drought does a bad thing for roots of trees. It dries them up, and so the roots just stop working. And then they may recover over the next couple of years, but there's still some damage done to them. And then we had the bad drought this past year, 2016, which really dried out the oak and oak roots. And so now 2017, despite all the rain we've had this spring and summer, the oak trees, I've seen several badly damaged oak and red oak and white oak trees.
Well, that's what I suspected, and when I see him this morning, I'll pass that on to him, okay?
I noticed my across the street magnolia yesterday. I'd heard of magnolias that were doing weird things, like dropping little flags of brown branches, and I looked at my neighbor's magnolia yesterday just because I wasn't looking at anything else in my yard. I looked at his magnolia, and I thought, doggone, look at that. The magnolia has little dried branches up through it. I have no doubt in my mind that was caused by drought as well.
Well, thanks, Walter. I'll pass that on.
All right. Tell them we said hey, Bob. Thanks for calling.
Bye.
We've got now Mike in Gainesville, Georgia, who joins us on Lawn and Garden. Hey, Mike. Good morning.
Hey, good morning, Walter. About 10 years ago, I went to war with some kudzu, and it was a battle. I finally got it.
All right, great.
Under control. But anyhow, I got what appears to be English ivy. I haven't researched it. I'll leave that up to you. And it's not responding to Roundup.
Yeah. My experience with English ivy is that it takes at least two sprays to bring it under control. And the reason I think in my case was because it was so high. When I was spraying the English ivy in the backyard, it was pretty much up to my knee. It was thick back there. And I sprayed one spraying over the top, and it killed everything down to about ankle high. And then I went back there and sprayed another time to get the ankle high stuff out of the way. After two sprays, I had it under control.
Oh, okay. Well, I'll keep attacking it. Surely it can be as resilient as kudzu.
There is no resistance, natural resistance anyway, of plants to the active ingredient in kudzu. Now, you can you can do GMO plants that have resistance to Roundup, like the cotton that is resistant to Roundup, soybeans that are resistant to Roundup.
Yeah.
But that's a GMO situation, not the weeds in your backyard, the kudzu or the English ivy, either one. So they will eventually succumb if you spray Roundup, not any doubling up or anything like that. Just spray according to label directions, but it may take twice at least with some of the very tough and hardy perennials.
Great. That was easy for you. I appreciate your help.
All right, Michael. Thanks for calling. Paige is up in Johns Creek. Let's see. Jay Paige, you are in Johns Creek, and there's the button I pushed to get you on the air. Hey, Paige, good morning.
Hey, good morning. I got a question for you. I have about 12 different roses in my yard, and with all the rain, they have gotten black spot, regardless of whether I sprayed for, you know, that multi-purpose for black spot mold and all that. And they're blooming, but they have no leaves. What can I do to bring them back to, you know,
Have you fertilized recently?
No, I haven't.
That's been my sort of theme this morning of if you haven't fertilized, do it. And one of the reasons for that is pretty practical. We simply had so much rain this year that the rain has washed most nutrients out of the soil. And so there's nothing much left then for the roses to have to make the leaves that supply the sugars that, say, make the buds that make the blooms. So if you haven't fertilized, that's the first thing to do. Fertilize the roses, get some foliage on it. Usually the foliage, and they get a certain amount of canopy, and that will trigger the buds to form, and then it blooms, and then Paige is happy. That's what I would do.
Okay, thank you. So it's not the black spot?
Well, black spot certainly had something to do with it, because not only is it losing or not putting on new leaves, but it's losing old leaves due to the black spot. The product that you were using was the Bayer 3-in-1. What were you using on the rose?
I, I think that's it. Yeah, okay. They're 3-in-1.
It's always, in my view, a good idea to rotate around between different fungicides. For any disease, it's a perennial problem for you, whether it's rose black spot or the spot that gets on Indian hawthorn. They're just different diseases, fungi, that respond to a rotation of chemicals rather than using the same one all the time, much as you worry about antibiotics in kids. If you use antibiotics all the time, then the whole group of kids becomes less resistant to disease. So with the roses, to rotate through another product, you could use Infuse, I-N-F-U-S-E, which is a different chemical than all the rest, or let's see, what's the other one? I saw the other day, Immunox. I saw a bottle of Immunox, and that is different from the Bayer 3-in-1 as well. So either Infuse or Immunox, or Daconil. Daconil is another one. You could easily find Daconil, but spray the fungicide on the leaves that are few that are existing now to protect them, and hopefully spray again a couple of times as the new leaves come on.
Okay, so pruning, thank you for that. So pruning will not help over winter if I, you know, prune them back and they come back all nice and lush. That doesn't work that way.
Well, it does. They do come back lush and flush and green and rosy if you prune during the late fall, early winter, I guess. But that's not really going to do anything for you right now. Pruning right now is not going to do anything for you.
Oh, okay. All right. Well, thank you so much. I appreciate everything.
I hope they're pretty, Paige. Thanks for calling.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
Bob comes to us from Cartersville. Hey, Bob. Good morning.
How you doing, Walter?
Man, I'm fine. What's up?
Hey, we have been, vegetable gardeners for a long time, and this year we decided to get into some fruit. So we got fruit trees, blueberries, things like that, but
awesome.
We planted muscadines.
Yeah.
And first time planter, I followed some routines off the internet, and they had kind of two different versions, and I think I planted them wrong. So I've got three trellises 20 feet apart, and two lines down each trellis, but
yep.
I ended up planting the plant right near the trellis, and I was going to train them to grow down 20 feet, but after looking at fertilizing and pruning videos, I noticed everybody else has got theirs planted in the middle of the trellis where they grow it down 10 feet each way. So I'm
That's
like,
right, Bob.
Oh, no. So I did plant it wrong.
Yeah. It needs to be in the middle. For listeners who are sort of wondering what Bob is doing and what Walter's talking about here, to trellis muscadines, it's always recommended to put muscadines on a wire because you can just manage them, prune them, harvest. Everything's easier when you have a wire. Typically, the wire is 20 feet long between two posts, and you plant the muscadine in the middle, training it then to have two arms that go in 10 feet in one direction, 10 feet in the other direction. Bob wasn't paying attention too much, so he planted his at the post. It came up, it went down, and now he's got a muscadine with one arm going down, hopefully 20 feet, maybe 10 or 15.
No, it is, and it's we just planted it in early spring, so it's down maybe 6 or 8 feet. So I guess my second question is, since it's so young,
yeah,
can I dig it up and move it back and cut it just below the wire so she will spread into two?
Yeah, but not now. You do it in when the leaves come off. Maybe November, December would be fine.
Okay.
And the roots on the muscadine are very shallow. You've probably found that out, and you will find that out when you dig it up. And so rather than trying to just dig really deeply underneath that middle, underneath the middle of the vine, try to use a pitchfork or a spading fork or something just to loosen the soil. Soak the soil real good before you dig. Soak it real good and then loosen the soil with the spading fork and find the roots and just gently pull them up out of the ground with your hand without worrying about how much soil comes with the tree or with the vine. And if you get more roots, the more roots you get with a muscadine, and there'll be some, if you're careful, it'll be 4 and 5 and 6 feet long. Just sort of gently pull them out of the ground, move them to the middle of the trellis, and have a nice wide area there, soften that you can dig little holes with a trowel and lay the roots into those holes, or furrows, I guess, that you make with the trowel.
Yeah, and we've got the perfect area. So do you think losing that 6 or 8 feet I've already got on these vines in late fall when the leaves fall off, you think next spring it'll bounce back fairly quickly?
Why do you want to take that off? It seems like you could just take that one arm and leave it alone and let it be 8 feet in one direction and train another bud close to the wire in the middle and train that bud to sprout and go down the different direction there. Why do that?
You're absolutely correct. I didn't think of that. Thank you.
Yeah, you could do that. There's going to be vigorous growth around the height of the wire. I don't see any reason why one of them wouldn't be able to be trained to go in the opposite direction. Yeah, you'll be fine.
Perfect. Thank you, Walter.
All right. Good luck with it, Bob. Enjoy.
Yes. Thank you.
404-872-0750 is the number of Lawn and Garden. And if you would like a recipe for muscadine hull pie, muscadine grapes, of course, a classic native southern grape. And if you'd like a recipe for a pie made from the skins of muscadines, I direct you to WalterReeves.com. Just type in muscadine hull pie and you'll get the recipe my mother made for our family year upon year upon year. It is sharp and tart. If you're a person who likes rhubarb pies, they have a little sharp and tartness to them. It's sharp, it's tart, there's a little lemon juice in there to help make the flavor a little acid. But if you put two scoops of vanilla ice cream on top, my friends, you have not enjoyed anything as much as we little Reeves boys did when we had the muscadine hull pie with a homemade vanilla ice cream. That was the talk of the family for a couple of weeks afterward. Again, WalterReeves.com, muscadine hull pie. It's 7:48. We'll be back after this.
This is Scott Slade, host of Atlanta's Morning News on News 95.5 at AM 750 WSB. We'll be covering breaking news, Kirk Mellish weather, and traffic red alerts through the weekend. And the Southeast's largest news team is here for you first thing Monday morning when you head back to work. News 95.5 and AM 750 WSB. Now back to Walter Reeves and the lawn and garden advice you need.
And a quick weather update brought to you by Ackerman Security. Today the high will be in the low 90s, 91, 92 perhaps degrees. Overnight low 70 degrees. Tomorrow a little bit warmer, mostly cloudy, mostly sunny, I should say, partly cloudy tomorrow. Tomorrow will be in the 90s again, 91 or 92, and the overnight lows in the low 70s. Your full weekend forecast comes up in 10 minutes on News 95.5 and AM 750 WSB. And a reminder that tomorrow, Sunday, you can pick up your Sunday edition of the Atlanta Journal-Constitution for in-depth news coverage and clip and save hundreds of dollars in coupon savings. It's 7:55. We've got John and Marietta who joins us. Hey, John, good morning.
Good morning, Walter. How are you doing?
Doing very well, sir. How can I help?
Okay, well, I was just wondering, listening to your discussion about the muscadine vine being planted at the wrong end of the trellis or wire, wondering if they got the room, would it be possible to move the wire or move the post and not do anything to the plant itself, leave it where it is?
You are a much more practical person than you look, John. That's exactly right. He could just move it down. I guess he could because he didn't have much vine. He said it was only 6 or 8 feet long on there, and he probably could have unwrapped it if he needed to and moved the vine and the post and everything, moved the post and the wire down 10 feet and put it in the right place without digging the vine up at all. That makes a lot of sense, John. Thank you for pointing that out.
Okay, take care.
All right, John. Thanks for calling.
Mm-hmm. Bye-bye.
404-872-0750 is the number on Lawn and Garden. In the next half hour, Ed in Lilburn has caterpillars crawling into his garage. Tony has rhubarb, but he needs to know when to divide it. Tony is lucky to have rhubarb in the first place. Mark in Oxford says, eclipse, why is the eclipse going west to east rather than east to west? We will call Kirk Mellish and find out why it's going from west to east. Jonathan in Lilburn says he's got a southern red oak dropping leaves like crazy right now. What's going on with that? All that will be next half hour. Our number again, 404-872-0750, and we'll be back after news.